Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. This is the international service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the short waves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, on the frequency of 5,850 kHz, also streaming via internet on rae.com.ar. You may also listen to us via our app for mobile devices, Digital RAE, that you can download for free. Digital RAE, available for Android and Apple phones. My name is Fernando Farias, and together with sound technician Gloria Sarmiento, we'll be bringing you this show in English for Monday, October 13, 2025. You will be able to enjoy tango music, a little bit of reggae music with the cover of a universally famous track. Also, we'll have some Andean music as well. We'll be talking about the recent death of one of the most popular, respected and beloved figures in the world of Argentine football, Miguel Ángel Russo, who passed away last week at the age of 69 after struggling with cancer for several years. He was the manager of Boca Juniors, and he died almost a week ago. So we'll be sharing his biography and the impact his death had in the world of football within and beyond the borders of Argentina. We'll also be having the artist of the day, Cuchi Leguizamón, an important folk figure, and also we'll be sharing a documentary on the so-called Miracle of the Andes, the crash in 1972 of a Uruguayan Air Force plane carrying a rugby team on board, an event that became known around the world because the survivors had to resort to eating human flesh to survive. A story of courage, of survival, of hardship that has been taken to the silver screen several times, most notably quite recently with that film The Society of the Snow, or The Snow Society. So we have a documentary that we'll be sharing with you today, because today is the 53 year anniversary of the crash in the Andes of that plane in 1972. Okay, folks, we are ready now to get started, but first let me tell you that you can get in touch with us by sending emails to qslrai@gmail.com or letters to Maipú Street 555, and then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. Either way, it's okay for sending reception reports if you are a DXA.
RAE, Argentina al mundo. RAE, Argentina面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けて Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentinian in the world.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
Coming up, we'll talk about Miguel Ángel Russo, the manager of Boca Juniors, who passed away last week, and he received many, many expressions of respect and love by all of the players that he had under his wing in his 40-year career as a football manager. But that will be after some tango music. This is a classic called El Entrerriano, Entre Ríos being one of the 24 Argentine provinces. So Entrerriano is somebody from the province of Entre Ríos. This is the rendition of Juan D'Arienzo Tango Orchestra.
Thank you.
Argentina and the football world are in mourning. Miguel Ángel Russo, one of the most respected coaches in South American football, passed away on October 8, 2025, at the age of 69, after a long battle with cancer. And today we will look back at his life as a player, as a coach, and how his passing was honored, both at Boca Juniors' famous stadium and beyond. Russo was born on April 9, 1956, in Valentín Alsina, Buenos Aires province. He spent his entire playing career with Estudiantes de La Plata, making 435 appearances between 1975 and 1988, scoring around 11 goals. As a defensive midfielder, he was known for his discipline, his tactical awareness, and his endurance. With Estudiantes, he won two Argentine league titles, the Metropolitano in 1982 and the Nacional in 1983. He was also called up for the Argentine national team, earning 17 caps and scoring once. He played in key qualifying matches for the 1986 World Cup under coach Carlos Bilardo, but injuries prevented him from being selected for the final tournament that the team, led by Maradona, would go on to win. Then he retired as a player in 1988 due to knee problems. He was relatively young, he was only 32 when he retired. But he went into coaching, and that's where the field in which he became legendary. His managerial career spanned over three decades, more than 1,000 matches across at least 16 clubs in Argentina and abroad. Here are some highlights of his career as a manager. His first roles were at Lanús, where he achieved the promotion to the Premier League. He managed Estudiantes de La Plata, Vélez Sarsfield, Rosario Central, San Lorenzo, Racing, and others inside Argentina. Internationally, he coached in Chile, Universidad, in Spain, Salamanca, in Mexico, Morelia, in Colombia, the Millonarios, the Alianza Lima of Peru, and Cerro Porteño in Paraguay, plus Al Nasser in Saudi Arabia. Perhaps his greatest achievement as a manager came in 2007, when he led Boca Juniors to the Copa Libertadores title. It remains one of Boca's most iconic continental wins. In 2020, during his second spell at Boca, he won the Argentine League and the Copa de la Liga Profesional. He also won domestic titles with other clubs, Vélez in 2005, a championship in Colombia with Millonarios in 2017, 2018 and more. But he had a battle with illness. He was diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2017, during his time coaching Millonarios in Colombia. Later, his illness was complicated by bladder cancer. But despite this, he continued coaching, leading his teams with dedication, often through treatment. In the months before his death, his health deteriorated. He was hospitalized several times, and from late September 2025, he was under home hospitalization with a reserved prognosis. His last match in command was on September 21st, 2025, a 2-2 draw against Central Córdoba. But soon afterward, he had to step aside. Miguel Ángel Russo died at his home in Buenos Aires on October 8, 2025, aged 69. Following his death, thousands of fans, fellow players, coaching colleagues, and club officials gathered to pay respects at La Bombonera, the iconic Boca Juniors stadium. At the funeral service held there, players including Edinson Cavani, Ander Herrera, and Boca's president Juan Román Riquelme were in attendance. Rivals fans also came showing solidarity. Russo's coffin was draped in the colors of Boca Juniors and Estudiantes, the two clubs most central to his life. Estudiantes as his playing club and Boca for his multiple successful spells as coach. One of his wishes was that he be laid to rest dressed in Boca's colors, and this request was honored. Matches were postponed in respect. Boca's upcoming match versus Barraca Central was postponed in acknowledgement of his passing. Words of respect poured in from across football in Argentina, from around the world. Clubs he was once part of, like Estudiantes, referred to him as prodigal son and glory of their institution. Rival clubs also expressed sorrow, highlighting not just his technical skill, but also his character, respect, warmth, leadership. FIFA President Gianni Infantino paid tribute, recognizing Russo as a football man who gave his all. Fans wore black armbands, banners with his name appeared, and there was a moment of silence in matches across the league. His son, Ignacio Russo, who's a professional footballer himself, played shortly after his father's death, and in a match following his passing, Ignacio was visibly emotional during a minute of silence, and then scored and dedicated the goal to his father. Miguel Ángel Russo was more than a trophy collector. He was a football man who believed in team, in discipline, humility, and in the bond between players, clubs, and fans. As a player, he represented loyalty and hard work, spending his entire playing life at one club. As a coach, he lifted Boca to continental glory. He resurrected struggling teams, built respect everywhere he went. His passing marks the end of an era, but the respect shown by thousands at La Bombonera, by rivals, by his players, and the way his legacy is being honored, prove that his impact will endure far beyond his final whistle. And here ends our tribute to Miguel Ángel Russo, a legend of Argentine football. Music now, and afterwards we'll have a documentary on the 1972 crash in the Andes, the Andes miracle, the beginning of that story of courage and survival. But that will be after some music, and this is a cover version, a reggae version of Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles, performed by an Argentine reggae band called Non Palidece. Sorry.
Look at all the lonely people. Look at all the lonely people.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a queen has been. Lives in a dream, wait at the window, wearing the face that he keeps in the jar by the door. Who is it for? All alone.
Okay, after that rendition of Eleanor Rigby by Argentine reggae band Non Palidece, we'll be sharing a documentary produced by the Australian TV, Australian network 7 News, that was made a couple of years ago on the anniversary, on the story of the Andes miracle. I'm pretty sure you're familiar with it. A couple of years ago, there was a famous movie produced and released by Netflix called The Snow Society. Well, it's based on this actual event, this historic event that happened exactly 53 years ago, October 13, 1972. This is a documentary on that, produced by Australian TV.
I just remember the sound of the impact.
Lost the wings, lost the tail.
I was so afraid.
I knew I was going to die.
I'm buried under concrete. I couldn't move.
People dying, people crying, people screaming.
The search has been called off.
Now we were on our own.
This would be their home for 72 days.
No food, no water, no help.
This is a nightmare.
How do you die?
Slowly.
I just wanted to live.
Hernando told me, Carlitos, I'm going to eat the pilot.
Alpha, Golf, Golf, please.
It's just after sunrise near Santiago, Chile. Our chopper is taking us high into the Andes. Below us, towering 15,000 foot peaks. It's the world's longest mountain range. Very little lives here. Where we're going is hours away.
And that's where we'll see the site of history's greatest survival story.
It's more than a story about cannibalism or a story about putting someone in a bucket and eating it.
Was dying an easier option?
I didn't want to lie. Not for me.
That Nando Parrado is alive to tell his story is nothing short of amazing. In 1972, he and a bunch of schoolmates were on a rugby tour. On a chartered Air Force plane, they were flying from Uruguay to Chile for a game of social football.
There were some seats available on the airplane, so I invited my mother and my sister to go with me too.
I was so strong, 19 years old, so full of life. All my hair were black and everything, and now I'm 60 years old.
Like Nando, Roberto Canessa had gone to Uruguay's top private school, Christian Brothers. It has a long and proud rugby tradition. They were part of the old boys team. Their youngest member was 18-year-old Carlitos Payas.
I was a spoiled boy. My breakfast was somebody was bringing it to me in the bed all the time, you know. I wasn't even a Boy Scout, so I know nothing about life.
On Thursday, October 12, they took off from the Uruguayan capital, Montevideo. On board were 5 crew and 40 passengers. But the plane soon ran into bad weather and was forced to land in Argentina.
And the next day on Friday 13th, we took off from Mendoza to fly to Santiago, but we never made it.
After leaving Mendoza, the pilot, who'd made the same flight 29 times before, headed south to cross the Andes. When he believed he'd crossed the highest point, he turned north and began to descend. But he was still in Argentina, on the wrong side of the Andes. Thick cloud hid what was below. On board, the rugby team had no idea.
We were all happy, making jokes.
The pilots had made a fatal miscalculation.
I can't let me...
Ah!
just remember the sound of the impact and the intense force of the impact. I hit something with my head and I passed out. I was in a coma for a few days after the plane crash.
12 died in that initial crash and 33 survived.
Yeah, it was a very strange impression to see your friends dead. I mean, they were lying there on the snow, they had the same clothes you had, but there was an invisible line of life and death between you and him.
Even now, 40 years later, getting to the site is dangerous and difficult.
Looking around, there is nothing but sheer rock faces.
We had to wait till late summer, when the snow has melted and it's safe to land.
Now we are over here, the crash site.
Just there is the crash site.
We're land? Yeah, okay.
It's a place that you have to go to understand it. There you get the shortness of breath and then you will understand, for example, how we wouldn't have the enough strength to bury our friends. We didn't have even earth to bury them.
Time has buried much of the plane. Just a few twisted relics remain.
No sound, no life, just rocks and mountains and sky. This would be their home for 72 days. They had no warm clothes, and the only food supplies they had was a bottle of white rum and two blocks of chocolate.
This first night was horrible, you know, everybody, people dying, people crying, people screaming. But at the end, this night goes away and appears a Saturday. The Saturday was a great day. No clouds in the sky, beautiful. You know, the Andes is in a kind of a way, it's beautiful, in another, it's horrible, you know. And that day, two planes passed over us.
Didn't see it.
Didn't.
What is your next memory after the crash?
My next memory after the crash is starting to wake up, slowly coming back from that coma, and I realized that there were faces close to me, and there were my friends. Nando, we crashed. Nando, can you hear me? We crashed. We crashed.
His friends, inadvertently, had saved his life. After the crash, believing he died, they placed his body with the other dead near the entrance of the fuselage. Nando's head lay in the snow, where the freezing temperature stopped his brain swelling and kept him alive. When he came to, his first thoughts were for his mum and sister.
So I asked about my family, and they were very blunt to me, very tenderly blunt. You know, Nando, your mother is dead. Panchito is dead. You know, and I said, where is Susie? And she said, she's badly, badly injured, and she's lying on the floor. I stayed with her. Stayed with her for a few hours until she died.
Amongst the wreckage, the survivors found a camera and a radio. On day 10, while listening to it, they heard the search had been called off.
So it was a very strange sensation, feeling that their world is alive and they consider you dead.
When you're abandoned to die at, you know, 13,000 or 14,000 feet with minus 35 degrees below zero, no food, no water, no help, no rescue, you turn yourself into a survival machine.
Lost in the Andes, surrounded by the dead, all they had was each other. They were cold and hungry, facing starvation.
We don't have any food.
You had no food. You had
no food.
You had little pieces of chocolate, but
yeah,
that ran out.
But nothing. That's nothing.
Well, not quite nothing.
Who was the first to raise the idea?
I remember clearly being with Carlitos and trying to sleep at night. And I say, Carlitos, what are you thinking?
I say to Nando, Nando, nothing is left in the little the chocolates. And Nando told me, Carlitos, I'm going to eat the pilot. That it's logic to say that because Nando lose his mother and his sister after. So as I used to say, consciently or unconsciously, he was, say, the responsible of the whole thing is the pilot. So
what are we going to do? We have to eat, and the only proteins are the dead bodies of the people that were in this plane. I said, you know, everybody's thinking the same thing.
Unable to light a fire to cook with, it would be raw flesh.
Your mouth doesn't want to open because you don't want to swallow a piece of a dead person. And then I thought of my mother, that she told me if one of my sons dies, I couldn't make it in life. I would die myself. So I said, if for not giving up, I have to eat this pizza, just swallow it, and nothing happened.
I just want to ask one thing, though. That first bite.
The first bite for me, it's like your first sexual relation. You have lots of expectations, lots of things going to happen, and then after it happens, it's over. Life goes on.
And the taste?
The taste is like raw meat from cow or whatever.
The living now dined on the dead. But the mountain wasn't finished with them yet. On the 18th day, an avalanche hit.
When the avalanche hits the fuselage, it goes inside and it buries 27 of the guys over there. It was so fast, it's like a lightning hitting you.
And I tried with all my strength, I couldn't move. And I said, Roberto, you had it. You're going to die. That's it. A very nice sensation of heat between my legs because I was peeing on myself and saying, that's it.
I was dying. I didn't have maybe 5-10 seconds of life in me. Somebody scratched my face and I could breathe.
And then Roy Harley took the snow off my face because I had time to put my hands out. Only my hands were out. And I could breathe again and I was back again.
So these guys who started this chain reaction, they saved 19 guys. 19 guys in 3-4 minutes.
As the weeks passed and more died, they realized they would have to pick the strongest to take on the near impossible task of crossing the Andes for help.
How did you decide who went?
You know, in the case of Nando, his motivation was to don't stay in the plane because if he stays in the plane, he must eat his mother and his sister.
Also trekking out with Nando was Roberto.
And had you known how tough that journey would be, would you have gone?
Yes. Because nothing is tougher than to die sitting there.
On December 12, 2 months after the crash, they left, heading west. They had no mountain climbing experience, no equipment, and their only food, human remains, carried in football socks.
It took us 3 days to climb the first mountain. And the worst part was the last part of the third day, when I reached the summit of the mountain. And I thought I was going to look into a green valley with roads, and then I realized I was in the middle of the Andes range. I couldn't see anything but peaks and peaks and peaks surrounded by mountains, 360 degrees around me.
My compromise was to give a step. And this is something I learned in life. I don't look at the mountain, I look to my next step, because there are lots of things that are uncertain in life and you don't know. But if you don't take the steps, you will never know how far can you go.
It would be many steps and many more days. Back at the crash site, their friends had all but lost hope.
it was horrible. You know, the days were passing, 10 days in the mountain, 25 below, it's impossible.
Finally.
For me, the moment, the line of life and death was the snow finished and the river begin to appear. That for me, I knew I was going to survive.
On the other side of the river, they spotted a Chilean farmer. Can you imagine the relief? Roberto had dysentery and Nando was beyond exhaustion. But none of that mattered because they were getting out alive.
He took a rock, put a piece of paper around it, tied it with a pencil, and he threw it across the river. And that's when I wrote the message, I come from a plane that crashed in the mountains. I'm Uruguayan. I need help. I have 14 friends wounded on the airplane. So that's the start of the end.
The farmer's name was Sergio. As well as the pencil and paper, he also threw them bread.
And I was so impressed with those pieces of bread that last year I told the shepherd, Sergio, I will never forget the two pieces of bread that you gave Nando. And he said, two, I gave him four pieces of bread. And Nando. I asked Nando, Nando, what? How many pieces of bread did the shepherd? He began winkling. When Nando winkles, he says he's telling you lies.
Was it four pieces or two?
I can't remember. Roberto says it was four, and I ate two. Yeah. I think there were three, and I ate. Anyway, I had done all the effort to go to get the bread.
We start hearing the beautiful noise of the helicopters coming. And then there appears those two beautiful birds. As I used to say, birds of freedom.
This is actual vision of the rescue. The living numbered 16. 29 had perished.
And my father, when I met him, he still didn't know if my mother was alive or not.
¿Cuántos familiares tienes tú? ¿Tienes más hermanos?
Tenía mi madre y a mi hermana que lamentablemente fallecieron en el avión y me queda otra hermana.
So that the first moment that we embraced each other, he says, I'm so happy. He didn't let go. And he asks in my ear, is mommy alive? Is Susie alive? And I said, no. So it was a very strange moment, happiness and sadness at the same time.
¿Cómo pudieron sobrevivir ustedes? ¿De qué se alimentaban?
Bueno,
sobre el tema.
In the days following, the joy at their survival turned to horror, as the world discovered the reason why.
And I know 100% of the people who maybe are watching this program, they say, oh, I wouldn't have done it. If you were there, you would have done it.
In the years following, Carlitos turned his near-death experience into a living, traveling the world talking about it. Roberto Canessa has given his life to medicine. A children's heart specialist, he once ran for president of Uruguay. In 1972, Roberto had a young girlfriend, Laura. They're still together today, married with three children. On the day he was found, her father broke the news.
At 2 o'clock in the morning, she remembers he was sitting on the bed and telling her, you are right. He's alive.
After beating all the odds, Nando continued to court danger. He became a racing car driver, a good one, making a living out of it for 25 years.
What's your favourite track?
Mount Panorama in Australia.
Bathurst?
Bathurst. My dream once was to race the Bathurst 1000, and I'm too old now, but my dream is to drive a racing car on Bathurst once.
We will have to get you out there.
Please, if somebody has a racing, Mark Scaife, all these beautiful people there, Craig Lowndes, I want to drive one of those cars.
During his time on the circuit, Nando wooed and wed Veronique. They have two daughters.
I had a fantastic life. I married a fantastic woman. I had a beautiful family. And I cannot ask for anything more.
What can we learn from your experience, Roberto?
That in life, your plane might fall once. You must be ready for your plane crash. We receive from life lots more than what we need, and we do lots less than what we can. If you have a decent kind of food to eat, if you have a bed, if you have water.
Appreciate the simple things in life.
Yeah. Yeah, life is more simple than what we think. We really make it complex.
Well, that was a very, very interesting and touching piece produced by Australian channel 7 News, a documentary on the Andes miracle. And we played it today on the occasion of the 53-year anniversary, the 53rd anniversary of the crash that set all this story in motion.
RAE, Argentina al mundo. RAE, Argentina 面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けて Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
RAE, Argentinian in the world.
RAE, Argentina al mundo.
Are dos arencita, mi tierra capallanera.
Gustavo Cucci Leguizamón authored many beautiful pages of the Argentine folklore repertoire. He was a remarkable author of sambas, chacareras, and vidalas, all of them rhythms of northern Argentina. He was born in the province of Salta in 1917. The story tells us that when he was 2, his father gave him an Indian flute, an instrument with which he mastered El Barbero de Sevilla. Later, he would try the guitar and the drum and even the piano, always playing by ear. In 1940, he met with poet Manuel Castilla, also a native of the province of Salta. With him, Cucci would start a close friendship and one of the more fruitful musical partnerships in the folklore field. Leguizamón and Castilla interpreted unforgettable zambas, chacareras, carnavaleros, and vidalas, in which tragedy, misery, sarcasm, and tenderness abounded. Cucci's wife and his children recalled this friendship.
Y por ahí se pedían cosas, eran hermanos. Cucci y Manuel han sido hermanos en el arte, en la vida.
They were like brothers, his family confessed, and had brothers in art and life. They knew how to transmit and interpret emotions about the stories they wrote, his wife recalled. Modern and creative pianist, Cucci Leguizamón was a great admirer of Bach, Mahler, Ravel, Stravinsky, Schoenberg, and above all, Beethoven. In 1967, Cucci met with the duo Salteño and got very impressed with their voices. Immediately then, Cucci offered himself as musical director, adopting a new formation for the time. Two voices in counterpoint and two guitars at the beginning. Later, they would incorporate a further accompanying guitarist. Later, under the direction of Cucci Leguizamón, the duo Salteño got consecrated at the most popular Argentine folklore expression, the Cosquín Festival, gaining the public recognition and a popularity which would extend throughout the country, especially during the 60s and 70s.
Sobre la arena iba pisando la luna, el trigo que va cortando madura por su cintura, mirando flores de alfalfa, sus ojos negros y azules.
Modern, creative, and brilliant, harmony suggested by Cucci was based on the counterpoint of the two voices, each one with a different melody, causing some dissonance when heard simultaneously, a characteristic that gave it also a special sonority. Two voices, synthesizing an accord and sounding like many voices. The duo Salteño premiered a large part of the Cucci and Castillo's compositions. These songs today are all considered classics of the Argentine folklore repertoire, such as La Pomeña. Gustavo Leguizamón was also a lawyer, a state prosecutor, a teacher, a national deputy, and a writer. But it was his musical creativity that granted him a privileged position in music.
La caja en sus manos tiembla y cuando se hunde en la tarde es una dalia morena y cuando se hunde en la tarde es una dalia morena el sauce de
Cucci era por ahí al revés, él componía, así un maestro de la composición,
¿Y es verdad que se pasaba horas y horas?
El Cuchi era genial. El Cuchi venía del Colegio Nacional, comíamos.
The Cuchi was a maestro of the composition. He spent hours on end playing the piano. There were zambas that took 10 years to see the light. He alternated his musical activity with teaching and practicing law. He himself confessed that he abandoned law because he was tired of living on human disagreement. Cuchi's work was quite exhaustive. It's worth mentioning Lloraré, I'll Cry, Samba del Carnaval, Carnival Samba, Valderrama, Maturana, En la Pomeña. Shortly before becoming 83, in the year 2000. His death aroused many painful expressions, especially among his peers. But his compositions remained and were repeatedly recorded. All in all, Leguizamón composed 82 pieces, almost all recorded in dozens of different versions by different musicians both in our country and in Europe. Such an exhaustive and beautiful production merited numerous prizes and very coveted awards, among them the one that recognized him as the most remarkable figure of Argentine folklore during the 20th century. Charismatic, a witty, talkative person, he himself told the story of Maturana, a rural character that starred a composition written with Castilla.
Alguna vez nos llegamos hasta el río Lavallén de Jujuy con Manuel buscándolo al chileno Maturana.
The lyrics describe a rural Chilean worker residing in northern Argentina who continuously cries for his Chilean land. Until one day, he goes back to Chile, and there he starts crying for Argentina. Cuchi worked on the music of this samba for 10 years until he got it ready for publication.
El que canta es Maturana, chileno de nacimiento, anda rodando la tierra con toda su tierra dentro. Anda rodando la tierra con toda su tierra dentro, andando por esos montes. Salta, se ha vuelto hachero. Si va a voltear un quebracho, su sangre llora primero. Si va a voltear un quebracho, llora su sangre primero. Chilenito, en el vino.
sino que lo duerme, dormido llora su padre. En el vino que lo duerme, dormido llora su padre.
Me llamo Cuchi Leguizamón. Cuchi es un apodo que yo no utilizo de nombre, porque igual que es el nombre, nada más que es mejor, porque este por lo menos tiene algo mío y el nombre no tiene nada. Gustavo Leguizamón me llamo yo.
Rai, Argentine vers le monde.
Rai, Argentina to the world.
Rai, 世界に向けて Argentina.
Rai, Argentina al mundo.
Rai, Argentina al mondo.
Rai, Argentinian in the world.
Rai, Argentina al mundo.
And with this, we come to the end of today's edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior, in English, for Monday, October 13, 2025. Our sound technician was Gloria Sarmiento, and the host, yours truly, Fernando Farias. Hope you enjoyed today's program. Thank you very much for listening, and hasta mañana.